BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
My name is Ross Sutherland. This is a series about the mysterious life and death of Arthur Craven. Craven was the nephew of Oscar Wilde. He became famous for his scandalous performance art pieces.
Yes! Man of fashion, chemist, whore, drunk musician.
This is the escape artist.
Arthur Craven!
Arthur Craven.
The escape artist.
Monsieur Delaunay has a face like an inflamed pig.
Patron saint of the surrealists.
His colours have German accents.
Inventor of performance art.
Oh, asshole!
Fire the starting pistol for modernism.
To understand Dada, to even understand punk rock.
Yes! Arthur Craven!
Alternative comedy.
A little pose in front of the mirror.
Our most daring performers today.
I write to anger my colleagues.
You should have a look at Arthur Craven.
What a cunt!
Craven blended life and art in an extraordinary way. He hid his true self under layer after layer of persona. He spent his entire career trying to confuse exactly what was his real life and what was a simulated art performance. Craven feels like such a contemporary figure, despite the fact that he was born in 1887. In this series, I've been trying to track Craven's life to work him out, but it seems that the harder you look, the less truth you find.
Please understand that I am the grandson of the Queen's Chancellor of England.
I've been sticking all my notes on Craven onto the wall opposite my bed, collaging together my research. Also, lots of angry sticky notes that said things like, fact check. ! Recently, the whole wall was starting to look like a bad artwork all of its own. I took a photo of the wall and sent it to Melvin, my producer at the BBC, with the caption, "Craven has won. I'm dead." About 20 hours after sending that slightly worrying text to Melvin, I received an email from Roger Conover.
There was no body, there was no note, and there was no answer.
Roger is one of the world's foremost writers on Arthur Craven. I'd spoken briefly to Roger over the phone right back at the start of the project when he pretty much warned me off the whole thing.
Roger, Lloyd Conover, and I'll leave that as a riddle.
I don't understand.
Roger has a double life.
Roger?
Maybe even triple.
I was beginning to wonder if Roger Conover was real.
And there was no answer.
Roger? Roger?
I'd like to be in Vienna and Calcutta, catch every train and every boat, lay every woman and gorge myself on every dish.
That sounds fun to me. Do you like jazz?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Reading his love
letter. It was uncanny that Roger had chosen this exact moment to get back in touch. Like, somehow he'd sensed that Craven had just beaten me. I half expected the email to just say, "I told you so." In actual fact, Roger was inviting me to his house to visit his personal Arthur Craven archive. I didn't have an ending for this series anymore, but maybe Roger had some ideas. I sent another text to Melvin telling him not to worry, I wasn't dead after all. Instead, I was going to Maine. About a week later, I was in a car with Roger just outside Portland, winding along a forest road. Before long, Roger's house appeared in the forest clearing ahead of us. three connected hexagonal buildings. So how long have you been here?
I've been here since 85.
Incredible.
Yeah, and it's a work in progress.
Roger told me that for the last four decades, he'd been the executive editor of a university press specialising in books on art and architecture. Seeing Roger's own architecture project, it was immediately clear to me that Arthur Craven was involved somehow. Behind the house was a tidal estuary where Roger swam each day, the water slowly appearing and then disappearing again in an endless cycle. Around the edge of the house, the decking was lined with rows of old weathered books, each book left open-faced to the elements. The pages, once full of text, now empty once more, disintegrated.
It's got turned to confetti.
Roger explained that a lot of the books were ones that he'd had a hand in.
It's kind of a character test. Some authors are thrilled by it, and others think that their work is being desecrated. But to me, this is an ultimate kind of respect for books, because it allows them to have a life too, a life of their own, outside of the static passivity that most books occupy in bookshelves.
Between the lake and the books, the entire forest clearing was this monument to self-erasure, a place where water and words dissolved into each other. Even the trees sounded like a TV tuned to static. Inside the house, Roger had created his own Arthur Craven Museum, rooms filled with rare books, boxing posters, artworks by Craven's peers and admirers. And yet, somehow, I couldn't shake the feeling that even if I read every shred of text, I still wouldn't know what happened to Arthur Craven when he disappeared in that boat into the Gulf of Mexico in 1918. Sitting in Roger's library room, I told Roger that I planned to end the series with an admission of failure.
I became too obsessed with this idea of finding out who the artist was behind the art. Because that's how I would sympathize with someone, right? Is I would go like, okay, here's public persona. But, like, I want to look behind the curtain. I want, you know, like, as if behind the curtain there is this kind of...
You're not going to find him. This is the Wizard of Oz. You know, you're not going to find him.
No, it's just...
His whole life was devoted to not being found. He was the ultimate escape artist. So, I mean, that's... The fact that we're talking about him 100 years after he disappeared and have no clearer idea now than people did at the time that he disappeared indicates how incredibly successful was this game.
Roger tried to make me feel better by telling me that at least by giving up, I might escape the curse that has befallen others that have tried to capture Arthur Craven.
The number of people who have researched his life, well, first of all, most people give up, but a number of people have actually died in the process of doing this. It's as if Craven so does not want to be found that he is able to still put a spell on those who get close. One example being Guy Debord, the Situationist filmmaker, was actually making a film on Arthur Craven when he was shot in a parking garage.
Oh my gosh, important safety tip.
So be careful, yeah. I feel somehow insulated from this.
But yeah.
Because Craven lives here.
So this is all Cravenalia I wanted you to see.
Roger showed me record books of boxing results.
At one point, I went through every page of this and found every reference to Craven. It took me like probably 200 hours to go through this and find all the references to that.
There was binder after binder of photographs.
Here he is in Van Dongen's studio, in drag, boxing gloves, wrestlers. This is Matisse here with a beard. So this is sort of an art studio slash boxing wrestling studio. So this is an article on Craven by Mina Loy, where she begins sort of sketching out his biography.
Do you know when she would have been writing this? Is this something that she would have written after his death, or is this
not death?
Sorry, Roger, I keep doing that. It took me a while to understand Roger's aversion to my mentioning of Gravan's death. First, I thought it was simply a question of honouring the facts known. After his last sighting in Salina Cruz, Gravan's body was never found. Ergo, we don't know if he died in November 1918 or sometime later. But the more time I spent with Roger, the more I realised that it wasn't a rejection of the date of Gravan's death, but something much more philosophical. It was about rejecting death altogether.
I don't think nailing down an answer is, that's not the point of my interest or research. Rather, not only leaving questions open, but letting questions open onto other questions so that the enigma and mystery becomes more complex over time, not more simplified.
Roger wasn't trying to solve the mystery of Arthur Craven. He was trying to protect it. It's a bit like protecting the truth of a magic trick. What Roger wanted me to understand is that we can't answer any questions regarding who Arthur Craven was. All we can grapple with is what Arthur Craven is now. Not the human being, but the artwork he became. The fairy tale of the Swiss boxer who somehow picked a fight with death itself. It was Craven versus the Grim Reaper. One more opponent, and arguably a win too, or at least a draw. Craven exiting the ring, neither dead nor alive, but something else. We're not supposed to fact check a fairy tale. When presented with a fairy tale, we're supposed to ask ourselves, what does this artwork tell us about us? With the story of Arthur Craven, we have to turn inwards.
Yes. Why does someone disappear? How do you disappear? Can you disappear? In that sense, I think he represents us, because I think don't all of us have within some part of our being the wish to self-erase, to disappear, to become someone else?
It's funny to think that there are so many authors who write because they think their legacy of living forever is about leaving something permanent. And that's completely different for, you know, what we're talking about in terms of Arthur Craven's conceptualization of forever is almost about leaving space, not creating this kind of permanent, solid, unimpeachable body of work, but creating space.
You got it, man. That's exactly why I'm attracted to Arthur Craven, for that very reason, because the contemporary artist or writer is interested in leaving behind some kind of artifice, some kind of artifact. And there's enough of that in the world. Arthur Craven completely shed that notion and went without it. His only artifact was himself. And what he produced was this question of who he was, leaving behind no monument, no trace, not even a body. Yeah. And at the same time, what he ends up producing is this incredible reputation and aura that haunts the 21st century.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he created a space that no matter how much we pour into it, never fills.
He did produce more than most artists will ever produce by producing nothing.
I made the mistake of saying that Craven's story ended in Salina Cruz, and you corrected me to say that that's not where the story ends. The way that you would describe it is the story doesn't end.
Yeah, that's the opening to the unknown. Also, books do not end when they're read or when they're bound. And yeah, I think reading Arthur Craven's life is about rereading the assumption that when someone disappears, they're gone, as opposed to being elsewhere or nowhere.
I thought for a moment about the people in my own life that I'd lost over the years, family and friends. Sometimes death forces its way into our lives, and the reality of that feels inescapable. The book of that person's life slamming shut. But Maybe if there's one lesson we can take away from Arthur Craven, it's that no story ever really ends. We live on in our deeds, but also in our mysteries. A blank page doesn't mean the story is over.
This doesn't have a beginning or an ending. It didn't begin with Arthur Craven, and it didn't end with him. We leave our ending without an ending now.
Yeah.
After Craven, we see the rise of surrealism, a correlation between a kind of dream space.
We see Craven being picked up by Breton,
this kind of ideal nascent imagination.
Craven may have become a surrealist.
He might have become interested in ways
what they come to
signify and what they make possible as provocateurs during that era.
The Escape Artist, Episode 9, The Missing,
kind of epic or mythic,
was written, presented, and produced by me, Ross Sutherland.
To create, I guess,
it was produced for the BBC by Melvin Rickaby. The music was by Jeremy Wormsley.
Hi. What soul disputes my body? I hear music. Will I be swept away? I do adore dancing and other physical foolishness. I feel it is plain that had I been a young girl, I would have been utterly corrupted. But since I've already plunged myself into this illustrated review, I can swear that I have never seen such enchanting photographs. The lazy ocean cradles the funnels. I see in the port, on the decks of steamships, among the indiscriminate merchandise, sailors mixing with stokers, bodies polished like machines, 1,000 things from China, fashions and inventions, then ready to cross town in the tranquility of automobiles, poets, and boxers. This evening, how great my disgust that, despite so much sadness, everything seems beautiful. Money, which is real, peace, vast enterprises, buses and graves, fields, sports, mistresses, even the inimitable life of hotels. I would like to be in Vienna and Calcutta, catch every train and every boat, lay every woman and gorge myself on every dish. Man of fashion, chemist, whore, drunk, musician, laborer, painter, acrobat, actor, old man, child, crook, hooligan, angel and rake, millionaire, bourgeois, cactus, giraffe, or crow.